Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Yeah, what's up?
All right. We are live. Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron here.
Yeah, it's the tornado, Tony Pennycal.
You sound bummed today. What's going on? Did I wake you up?
Man, I got a headache right now. Proof that there is a brain in my head. I got a headache right now. On par with one of the worst I've ever had.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I get them a lot of times, stress-related headaches. The last few days have not been good for me, and I'm just flipping out on everybody. I cursed out about the entire office today and told some of my friends off, you know. Anybody that was even, you know, breathing at me wrong was getting it.
You better get yourself checked out, you know. You heard about that NFL football player got traded and found out he had a fucking brain tumor.
Yeah, you know what team you got traded to, right?
The Eagles, right?
Yeah. They're the ones that saved his ass.
Yeah. That sounds like you got a cerebral cortex issue going on there.
Can I just live with the same distress headache?
Yeah. I don't know. I had a week straight of headaches when I was a kid. And I'll never forget.
I think the longest I've ever had, I think I had a headache for something like 9 consecutive days or something.
Yeah. Well, sorry to hear that. I did go out and get in touch with good old Matt Yanofsky, and he hooked us up with a boxing guest at 8:30, and then we have...
I'm in the US today, and I don't have a lot of help on the computer. I'm trying to get a lot of things on. And I am, and do you want to do the gas off my team?
Yeah, so we have Ben and Chris Nisley, who is doing an amateur boxing event in Maryland that he's going to tell us about. It's going to be November 11th. And he's got a female and male boxers on the card. And also, I wanted to kind of start off with the boxing topic because we had our former guest, our recent guest, Edwin Rodriguez, put on a good performance on Showbox the past weekend. And just absolutely demolished Will Rosinski in the scorecard in the ring from what I saw. I agreed more with the announcers. Did you get to watch that fight, Tony?
I did not get to see it, but I did get to read about it. You know, a lot of people thought it was much closer than it was, scored. And some people even thinking that Rodriguez came out of the short end. I did not get to see it. But what did you think?
I thought it was closer. And I even looked at the CompuBox numbers they put out after the fact. And it looked like far away Rodriguez had the fight won. But I thought Will Rosinski did a hell of a job. Didn't really deserve to lose that fight. If anything, it should have been a draw. I don't think Rosinski, you know, really did enough to win it. You know, the guy was a hometown favorite, obviously. He's fighting in New England, Rodriguez is. So I think that had a lot to do with it. I was rooting for the guy, and I even thought it was closer. So, you know, we just had him on the show. Obviously, I'm going to favor him. So if I think it's close, then, you know, maybe somebody else could even see Rosinski winning. But, I don't know, I just didn't see him doing enough to win. But I thought it was close enough for a draw. At least, you know, 9-5 to 9-3 instead of, like, 100-90. That's a little ridiculous to give him every single round. I don't know if Rosinski deserved to have his first loss that way. But, it was an interesting fight, you know. It goes to show you, you know, what certain judges look for in a fight and what somebody who doesn't score fights looks at. Because I never scored a fight, really. You know, a boxing match anyway. Round by round. Unless I'm doing actually ringside coverage or something.
Yeah,
but, you know, typically when I watch a fight like this, I look at who commands the rounds, and it was tough to tell. You know, it was back and forth the whole fight. And neither guy really hammered the other at any point to the extent that you thought they were going to get knocked out. So there wasn't anything like that to turn the fight one way or another. So I thought it should have been a draw. But nevertheless, I'm still glad that our boy is undefeated there. That's a pretty good win for him. But, you know, it's also the first time he's fought in a long while, coming off a rotator cuff injury. So hopefully he picks up on the fact that he could have lost that fight and, you know, takes to the next level, whoever he faces next. But I think that's shortchanged either way you look at it. What do you think he lost? Or do you think it was a draw? Or do you think he won? To just get blown out like that on the scorecard. So, but it was a good card. Good fights. What can you do? We have a lot of the main news this week to talk about. Of course, we got the big UFC 137 event coming up this Saturday. And, of course, Nick Diaz has to be controversial, as he always is. And he's come out in the last couple of days and said that he would have rather done the boxing. And looking back, if he could change things. So that was kind of interesting. Nick Diaz, he's now going to be the main event of this UFC 137 card after. First, he was scheduled to fight George St. Pierre for the championship. They axed that fight, and they said BJ Penn's initial opponent, Carlos Condit, was going to fight George St. Pierre, and Nick Diaz is going to fight BJ Penn. So what happens? George St. Pierre gets hurt. He's out of the fight. Now we have the main event is BJ Penn versus Nick Diaz. So it's going to be quite the fight. You know, Nick Diaz is an off-the-wall character. He's a hell of an athlete. He does the triathlons in addition to MMA. And, you know, he's had a lot of great MMA fights. He's got a lot of experience in the sport. Probably not as much as BJ Penn. Definitely not as much as BJ Penn. But to hear him talk the way he is about boxing sort of makes all the progress the UFC has gained through the years seem pretty hollow. You know, they're still having a problem with guys complaining about their paydays. So it kind of made the news this week of the Bellator purchase by Viacom interesting. Because as we've seen through years, we've had all kinds of different people involved in mixed martial arts trying to promote it. We had Donald Trump at one point interested in Affliction and invested in it. And I got to ask him a question during a conference call way back when. And I asked him about, you know, the growth of the sport and what he thought of it. And he said, ask me in a couple of years. And in a couple of years, Affliction, which he had invested in, was gone. So now he's out of it. Golden Boy Promotions was almost trying to get into it at one point, talk about it, but never did pull the trigger. And it was a few years ago. UFC is obviously taking the number one spot as far as leagues go. And when they bought out Strikeforce, this fledgling league called Bellator, which I remember talking about back in the beginning, we used to do the fight list, or the MMA fight list every week. And I remember getting in the habit of talking every week about another Bellator fight and wondering, you know, how these people are able to do these. Every week there's a fight. And now all of a sudden they're the number two league in the world behind the UFC, and they have now I have a relationship with Viacom. And there's no real news out there that I've read about what the asking price was, what the final cost was, but the more important thing is what Viacom is worth. You know, here we have not just you know, a single owner or a small ownership group of rich executives. We have a media conglomerate now owns Bellator Fighting Championships. And it was just a couple of weeks ago, no, probably a couple of months ago, maximum, that I started running Bellator press releases on the website. So kind of interesting timing. But Viacom, just so everybody knows their revenue, in 2010 was $9.34 billion. And, you know, obviously the UFC is backed by the Fertitta brothers, who own their casinos out here in Vegas, and a small portion from the folks over in Abu Dhabi for backup. And Dana White is pretty much a figurehead. I don't think he puts much of his own income back into the UFC. I think it's more the investment money comes from the Fertittas in Abu Dhabi. But he's part of the ownership mix. But, you know, even all three of those combined, they don't have the broadcast capability of the Viacom. So it makes it pretty interesting, especially since Bellator doesn't normally operate with a pay-per-view model. It's all, you know, weekly tournaments on TV. On MTV, to be exact. Viacom consists of MTV Networks, BET Networks, and Paramount Pictures Corporation. So they obviously have quite a bit of reach. I think they're like right behind News Corporation. Actually, the fourth largest media conglomerate, Viacom, behind the Walt Disney Company, Time Warner, and News Corporation. So just when the UFC now is making all this news for going over to Fox TV, and they're getting all this airtime with the NFL football. I don't know if you watched the pregame last week, Tony, but Michael Strahan went into like a five-minute tirade about who should fight who in the NFL. Did you see that?
No, I did not. I did not watch the pregame last week. I barely watched any games last week.
Well, I watch them all the time now. And they had the pregame. I happened to get it flipped back and forth between ESPN and Fox. And Michael Chan just starts going off about, you know, who should fight who and why in the NFL. And he gets up after the whole thing and does a mock elbow at Howie Long's pet. And they're plugging UFC on Fox in the same thing, the same segment. So I thought it's interesting how they're hitching their card to the NFL, the UFC is. And the UFC president, Dana White's always mentioned that he wants the UFC to be as popular as the NFL someday, or even more popular. So, you know, aligning with their one of their major coverage networks is pretty huge for them. But Viacom kind of ups the ante here and makes it a real game for once, because if they come in with all their billions and they start spreading the money around through paychecks, we're going to see a real interesting situation, you know, where MMA itself could become as popular as the NFL maybe, but it's going to be a different ballgame because the UFC is not going to be guaranteed that top slot if Viacom really decides to invest a lot. In time, money, and effort in this thing, which I don't think they would have bought it if they weren't ready to do. So it's going to get exciting there. But I just thought that was interesting that, you know, here we have a main event guy, Nick Diaz, talking about he should have done boxing. And, you know, it's all about the paydays. And then a company like Viacom comes in there with a could provide those big paydays and could lure a lot of people away from the UFC. Or at least, you know, at the very least, I think they would keep the UFC on their toes with the fighter pay and get them to up the ante for what they currently pay their guys. We'll see. We don't know what's going to happen yet. We just know that it's changed hands, so keep your eye out on that story. And we have the boxing promoter there on tonight. We also have Lee Dean, former guest from Massachusetts. We had him on a while back. It was right before his fight with Christian Moorcraft, who ended up going to the UFC after that fight. And he's had a tough go of it. But we just talked to Mark Coleman a few weeks ago. And Mark Coleman, of course, we mentioned Dan Severn. And the guy who just beat Dan Severn, his last fight, and Dan Severn's last fight, Lee the Beast Bean, is our guest tonight. So it's kind of ironic that we worked our way back to him. And we were just talking about him a few weeks ago. And it was completely by chance. I didn't really go out and say, well, you know, we want him back for this week. You know, I just got handed it because he's got a fight coming up in November in Massachusetts. Another Rumble in the Jungle at the Jungleplex in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I think it's November 18th. Or November 19th, Saturday. So we have him on at in the 9:15 Eastern hour. And a couple little stories to chit-chat about other than that. Speaking of UFC on Fox, Fox is going to be right after NFL this weekend. So if you're an MMA fan, you might want to check that out. They're going to preview, it's going to be UFC primetime previewing the first card on Fox, which is November 12th, and it's going to be Cain Velasquez versus Junior Dos Santos, the heavyweight championship. Pretty big deal. Velasquez is undefeated, but he doesn't have all that much experience. Junior Dos Santos seems to have a little bit more experience. Maybe a little bit of the style. He also has a lot of recent activity because Cain Velasquez has been off a full year now. His last fight was October 2010 against Brock Lesnar, where the guy's face wide open. And it wasn't, it didn't take long either. So he's coming off a long, long way off. From injury. He's still got the belt, but he's going to face the Junior Dos Santos, who's going to be ready. He's going to be fresh. You know, he's going to be seasoned from his time on The Ultimate Fighter, and just basically being more active, not being injured during that time. So we'll see what happens. But Cain is probably one of the best boxing heavyweights in MMA, so he's going to be all fists in this one. And Junior Dos Santos is more of a well-rounded type of fighter, even though he likes to strike too. So I think this is going to be a really good event for Fox. There's a lot of other good fights on that card, but the big card this weekend is UFC 137, like we mentioned already. BJ Penn versus Nick Diaz is the main event. We also have some other fights that are worth chatting about, too. We have Facebook is having the first four fights. They're going to show it on Facebook/UFC. Tristan Jacoby versus Clifford Starks. Chris Camozzi versus Francis Carmont. Another former guest of ours, Danny Boy Downs versus Ramzi Nijem, who was one of the Ultimate Fighter guys from last season. Brandon the Truth Vera back fighting Elliot the Fire Marshall. And those round up the that fight rounds out the Facebook fights. Then we have Spike TV's preliminaries. And interestingly enough, the whole deal with Viacom, Spike TV is actually a subsidiary of Viacom. It's a network that they own. So even though they own Bellator, Spike TV has decided to keep doing UFC programming until they can't anymore, which will be at the end of 2012. So that delays Bellator from coming over to Spike TV until the end of 2013, which is sort of interesting because a lot of experts would probably say that, you know, they're doing that just to piss off the UFC because it doesn't allow the UFC to take that library somewhere else, you know. It's stuck with Spike TV. Even though they could have released it, they're keeping it. So it's kind of like the first move to really cement their competition between each other. But anyway, Spike TV, two fights, preliminaries. We're going to have Tyson Griffin versus Bart Palaszewski and Donald Cowboy Cerrone versus Dennis Seaver. Those are the two preliminary fights they're going to show. And pay-per-view fights, we're going to have Hatsu Hayoki versus George Roop. Scott Young Guns Jorgensen versus Jeff Big Frog Curran. Mirko Krokop Filipovic versus Roy Big Country Nelson. And Nelson is actually favored to win this one this time. He's had a couple of tough fights. He had walking pneumonia in his last fight with Frank Mir. So that's, you know, kind of a tough thing to deal with when you're in the middle of a big time fight like that. But, you know, he also has the big girth to deal with, which has looked to be something that's been slowing him down in the last couple of fights. But Krokop is slowed down because he's an old bastard. So I think this is going to be an interesting fight. You know, Filipovic and Nelson there are both going to be fighting to stay in the UFC, basically. So they're going to have that little fire under their ass to win. But Roy Nelson, I think, is the better fighter at this point. He's a little younger. He's a little more dynamic. And Krokop's had nothing but luck in his last few years. I don't think I've ever seen him in the UFC. Since he's come back to the UFC, I don't think he's ever had a really, you know, top-of-the-line fight. So he either needs to show that or probably pack his bags and go retire. Czech Congo, I talk about a lot as being one of the most physically gifted fighters with his physique, but just absolutely a mess as far as technique. And, you know, this guy looks like he should demolish anybody he goes up against, but he has the sloppiest, ugliest fights you've ever seen. So he's going to be fighting Matt Mitrione, who's sort of a youngster to the mixed martial arts scene. He actually called himself a baby in the world of MMA in an interview the other day. So he's still young and unproven in a lot of ways. So Czech Congo is a great opponent for him. It wouldn't break my heart if he ended up beating Congo so bad they threw him out of the UFC. But we'll see. I don't know if Congo's at that level. We'll just throw him out. He's been a good opponent for a lot of people. He's kind of like one of those test guys they throw in there to really show if a fighter's ready to stick around and move up the ladder. And, of course, we already talked about BJ Penn versus Nick Diaz. I like Diaz in this fight, but BJ Penn can never be underestimated, so could be a really, really big time war between these two guys, and we'll see. We'll definitely see Saturday night. And other than that, we got some Don King news, believe it or not. Don King.
Are you talking because it's the 10th anniversary of me dressing up as Don King for Halloween?
No, but Don King is starting his own deal with something called Wealth TV. And they have like over 100 million homes or something like that that they're available in. And he doesn't really have any superstar boxers anymore. So supposedly he's going into this TV network deal where they're going to have singing and dancing and performances alongside boxing events. And he's putting all his energy behind this. So that was in the news this last week. So that was kind of funny. Floyd Mayweather Jr. just got a big break in his criminal escapades due to the complaints from the security guards at his mansion there out here in Vegas. And basically, they had a civil case, these security guards that were complaining about the parking situation at Floyd's mansion. And apparently, it's not just like I thought it was with, you know, his guests or whatever. Like, he's having parties there all the time. It's not as much about that as it's about his own cars. He's got 29 cars or something crazy like that.
Oh, God.
On the property. So apparently, you know, you can't fit them all in the driveway. And that's pissing off some of the homeowner association people. And there was a civil case. I guess that's been dropped. And now the criminal case just said went to trial this past Wednesday. But it's only one aspect of the criminal case. I hadn't known this until I read about it the other day, but there's actually two streams of criminal complaints regarding the security guards there in his own compound. And the one that was the least violent of the two, I guess you could say, he was cleared. He's acquitted. So no charges stand on that one. He just I don't even think he was there in court the other day. His lawyers just came in and got him off. So now the only one that remains is the case where the security guard says he actually poked him in the face. Mayweather poked him in the face during an argument over these cars and the tickets that he was getting.
Now the question is, did he poke him before or after the security guard tried to hug him and kiss him?
Right. There was no headbutts involved, though. But, yeah, that was sort of interesting with, you know, what was going on there. But there's also a way more serious charge or group of charges related to his domestic dispute there with his ex-girlfriend or ex-fiance or ex-wife or whatever she is. The mother of his children, who he said he would kill if they told anyone. Or allegedly said. That's the big one. And he could face up to 30 in jail for that one. And then there was something I caught on ESPN this morning. They had a big discussion over Bob Arum's recent comments. I don't know if you heard about what he said now, but he's going out there.
Was that about Pacquiao and Mayweather?
Yes, saying that Mayweather is actually scared to fight Pacquiao because he doesn't want to deal with his right hand.
Yeah.
And he's so scared that the fight will never happen. That's what Bob Arum's saying. It's never going to happen. Which sounds weird because I thought, you know, from other comments I've heard from Bob Arum in recent weeks that they were moving closer to actually making this fight happen. But
it was Pacquiao and Mayweather in May, or like the first weekend of May, I think.
But obviously, of course, you know, went to press about, you know, 6 weeks ago. So, I mean, obviously, especially with these things change, you know, as quick as a hiccup.
Right. Well, you would think, you know, they're kind of both to the point where it's the next fight or not at all. And I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll say, I haven't read anything recently on Floyd except for, you know, the charges and the court thing. But with Pacquiao, what I read was if Mayweather is not out of consideration, then they'd better be lined up as potential 2 month fight, that being Timothy Bradley and then Maurice Jones at Philadelphia.
Maurice Jones, is that what you said?
No, Mike. They can come out and say, well, maybe he is doing something or whatever. By the third time it comes around, maybe it's not Mark Flynn or Rich Rodron or anybody else. Maybe it's me. You know? The guy that got the most advice a lot of times says the most.
Right. Well, I think the big time negotiations, if they ever take place and if this fight's ever going to happen, are going to start immediately after Manning wins the fight against Marquez, which obviously is no guarantee, but it's pretty much expected. So once that fight is over, I think we'll know a lot more in the following week about whether this fight is possible. You know, right now it seems like very unlikely, but it's definitely possible. I think if we get through that week with no news, it becomes even more possible. But that week after that fight's going to be big. Because especially if Manny knocks him out. Manny goes in there and knocks him out early, especially we're going to have a lot of people just screaming for that Floyd fight. And it's going to be the perfect timing because, you know, Manny's already a hero and Floyd made himself even more of a villain off his last fight. So it'll be that perfect good versus evil type of bad guy versus good guy fight like WWE used to be famous for. So we'll see. I think it's got a good possibility of happening, but it's just, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, it's fun to talk about. Fun to think about, but it's just so hard to make it happen. You know, either way, I think we're going to have some good boxing fights to talk about. It's just kind of too bad. It seems like lately the big marquee boxing matches are just getting wrapped up in controversy. You know, you got Bernard Hopkins with the B-hop flop there in that fight right after the big Floyd Mayweather marquee disappointment fight. And even this little Showbox thing that I watch, I decided to give boxing another chance. I watched a full fight on Showbox, and the judges handed to the guy with a lopsided decision when he actually came closer to a draw than anything else. You know, and there wasn't actually as much controversy, of course, with that one because it wasn't as high profile, but still, it's like, you know, it kind of makes you look at what's broken in boxing and what needs to be fixed. And, you know, who needs to start looking at the bigger picture there with, you know, how are we going to keep fans involved when we get situations like this happening all the time. But it is what it is. Anyway, we're going to be on the line here in a minute or two with a guy working on a big event in Maryland, amateur boxing event. And I'm going to get him on shortly, Chris Nisselty. Sorry. then our 9:15 missed were confirmed for Lee Bean. He's a heavyweight guy we interviewed over a year ago now. But back when I was still living in Massachusetts. Back in the day. And he's been fighting all over the New England area the last few years. Got a record of 8-2. This coincidentally was my record senior year at 171 wrestling. I wouldn't have believed it before the year started. Wrestling 15 pounds over my weight class. He's 8-2 in MMA. And he's fought most of his fights for Cage Fighting Extreme. I've done a little bit of work for over the years. Hooked him up with their blog design and all that stuff and did some website work for them. And I used to interview a lot more of their fighters, but it's just been a while since I've been in touch with everybody over there. And I would probably be going to this fight, but I have a previous engagement to worry about. I'm actually going to be back in the area that weekend, moving back to Mass from Vegas.
Oh, really?
Back to New Hampshire, I should say, not to Mass. Oh, I'm going to be staying in Mass for that weekend. So I might get to see more of leaving in person once that happens. We'll see. Let's get Chris set up. He's going to have an amateur boxing card in Maryland on November 11th. Going to be female and male boxers, local guys and girls, and he'll tell us all about it. He's got a bunch of information in. We'll get it going. Where's my dialing music when I need it? So did you get to watch any boxing this week whatsoever?
I caught some of the original Jeanette fight. I didn't get to the job on the other guys want to engage.
I didn't even remember that fight was going on.
Yeah, Daniel won. He won every round. I mean, he dominated the fight. I forget his opponent's name. Vara, maybe. I'm not really remembering. It was Spanish. And, he came out of the fight. He moved up in weight class. Again, Daniel was, one of the best, in the sport today. And he was sitting there saying, well, hey, I'm happy with my performance. Happy with the performance in all three rounds.
Good. Yeah, that's never something that you want to brag about. Well, Daenerys is pretty multi-talented. I saw him, actually, he was out here at a fighting event. But at one of the Friday night fights at the Cosmopolitan, he was actually a photographer, a ringside photographer for the fight. That's one of his other hobbies, I guess. So I gave him a card. Just never got back to it. Who knows? I'm having technical difficulties here with Skype.
Mm-hmm.
Which is now owned by Microsoft. Even though I don't see anything that's changed as a result of that partnership. The one thing I'm worried about is ownership causing them to raise prices. Pretty good prices right now. It's like $3 a month. No, $3 for an incoming number. What is it? $3 a month for the service, and then it's $12 a month. $12 every 3 months for the service. For the number. What is going on? There we go. More second here, and we'll have them online. Like a minute. Let's go to Skype. I guess we should take a moment while we're waiting to plug our few sponsors that we have out there. If you want to sponsor us or advertise on the show, you can email info@unlimitedflightnews.com. But we're going to give a shout-out to our buddies over at drinkcocaine.com, zionsshop.com, and also MarijuanaMuscle.com. They have a powder made from hemp seed. It's pretty good stuff. Where's Chris?
Hello?
Chris?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
Great. We also have Tony, the Tornado Pentacal on the line. He's our boxing rain man, we call him. So.
Yo, what's up?
Cool, how's it going?
If you have any obscure facts that you want to know, just ask Tony.
Gotcha.
Tell us a little bit about this big event you've got coming up on November 11th.
Okay, November 11th at Duke Burns Arena. It's actually, we haven't officially decided on the name yet. We're calling it Off the Boots because it's a breast cancer benefit. But exactly, me and my co-promoter were kind of half and half on the name. You know, I love the name. I just don't know if it, you know, if it would offend anybody. So, for those that are still offended, it's possible for breast cancer. But November 11th at Duburn's Arena was going really well. We've already sold close to 1,000 tickets, and still have 2 more weeks to go. It's all amateur shows. I got some of the country's top-rated amateur fighters, as well as some local fighters fighting for the first time.
Any fighters from Philadelphia?
What's that?
Any fighters from Philadelphia?
I don't know about Philadelphia, but I think we have a crew coming out from Allentown.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking to do that from Allentown.
What's that?
I said I know some of the gyms and some of the training facilities up in Allentown.
Yeah, we have, I think, is it King's Gyms bringing a group of fighters down? Marshall Kaufman's gym from King's Promotion.
Yeah, I know Marshall because I followed his, I've actually covered his son, Travis.
I just met his son last week. So.
Oh, good right.
Guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've quite a couple times. I covered him once or twice in some of the live events I've been to.
Yeah, he's got some potential. He's got a hand injury right now. He's going to be on the sideline for about 3 months.
Yeah, I heard about that.
But, yeah, we got those guys coming down from Allentown. couple guys coming up from Virginia, and then a lot of local fighters right out of Baltimore.
And how long have you been interested in boxing? And
how long have I been in the boxing game?
Yeah.
I've been in all for about 13 years. I started probably when I was 12 or 13.
Have you boxed yourself as a fighter?
Yeah, I boxed myself all amateur. I never won a ton of pros. I was 9-2 as an amateur. I was actually training to go pro, and I kind of injured myself, so I backed off. I'm just training guys now, and I just started promoting shows and managing guys.
I did in college boxing, but I had one semester at it. And now my exchange year with Virginia Military Institute, so I got to go to the nationals. And I almost fought each other in the national.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day. But it kind of worked out good because that year I ended up getting to the finals, and I fought a guy named Michael Jordan, big black guy. But it wasn't the Michael Jordan. The guy
right.
From West Point. And I ended up getting the bronze medal, even though I lost to him. And he went on to fight on ESPN. They had the broadcast on ESPN that year.
Oh, wow.
And he fought on ESPN against a guy from Air Force Academy, which was the first school I went to. And then I couldn't pass calculus, so I went up to Norwich University. And I got to do an exchange program with Virginia Military Institute. So that was my only semester actually boxing competitively. You know, we had a club team up in Norwich.
How many fights did you have total?
I went to 2, including the Nats. I won my first fight at Nationals, but lost to Sally. Lost to one other guy that Tony and I, to this day, talk about how bad he was, Jesse Bond. We just mentioned him earlier. He was a foul.
Yeah.
He liked to.
He had 6 arms, but he didn't hit you with all 6 of them. He about clutched you and clinched you with about 5 of them.
Yeah. It worked out well.
I've never been clinched so much in a 3-round fight.
What weight?
185.
Okay. Actually, you'll get a kick out of this. I still hold this record. Rich and I, in fact, Rich forgot part of that discussion. He was talking about Michael Jordan, that he ended up losing to the Nationals. Didn't tell you who has a win over Michael Jordan. I'm still, as far as I know, and I don't think anybody else will ever be stupid enough to ever try this, the only guy in college boxing history to fight 5 weight classes in a 3-month span.
Wow, with him?
Yeah, no, nobody else has ever done that. I was talking to my old assistant coach last year, and we brought it up. He's like, I don't think anybody else has ever done it. I'm like, of course, nobody's that stupid. And I'm not 5 weight classes. And I'm not talking like 112 to like 132.
Yeah, so he was probably a big guy cutting some major weight, huh?
Yeah, I'm talking 165 to heavyweight.
Jeez. Did you
wind up
going pro?
No, I fought amateur, because when you were saying about having injury issues, I was asking what derailed you?
What's that? I'm having a lot of trouble hearing you.
Yeah, what type of injury derailed your career?
Well, I started with a slip disc in my back.
Yeah.
That was like the first real injury I had, so. And I was kind of sidelined for a while. And then as soon as I started getting back into it, I tore a rotator cuff in my shoulder. So I was like, all right, maybe it's my time came down. So I'm kind of just training guys now and promoting.
Are you sure we're not like twins?
What's that?
I said, are you sure we're not twins? Because I've had almost the exact same story. I was a 2-time All-American. I was a 2-time All-American, And I was doing real good boxing out of Philadelphia. Tore ligaments in my thumb, playing flag football, 18 months of a shelf. Then I came back from that and hurt my shoulder in a sparring session.
I did my shoulder in a sparring session.
Yep, 5 months of rehab there because I was stupid enough to hide it from the coaches and keep trying to box with it for two more rounds until they finally figured it out.
I did the exact same thing. I finished the round. I didn't do a good job of hiding it, but I definitely finished the round.
Yeah. Oh, I was able to hide it until finally the one coach was like, you know what? You're hurt. And it's like, well, how do you know? He's like, you're not throwing your left hook. Everybody that knows me knows I live and die off the left hook. And then I was actually using, like, you know how, like, when Hopkins would fight and he'd always have his left hand real low? I was playing like that. Like, you're traditionally more of a, the peekaboo stance kind of guy. And actually, that's how I changed my style, using more of my shoulder for defense than my arm, because I wasn't able to hold it up. And then they stopped the sparring session after the third round. I did it about 30 seconds into the first. So that kind of derailed me for 5 months. Started getting in shape. I was training. High ankle sprain in a jog. You know, I'm like, are you kidding me? And then I took some time off. I took a few changes in my personal life, and they actually got invited to come back to the gym to be the chief sparring partner for a friend of mine who was fighting for a USBA title. And a month before his training camp was set to kick off, I ruptured my appendix on vacation.
We'll get there every time with injury.
Yeah, if it wasn't bad luck, I'd have no luck.
So you got a box or pretty much done?
Excuse me, what's that?
I could have you box since, or are you pretty much done?
No, I spend more time training guys now. I work so much at my regular job. There are nights that, like tonight, if I would have tried to get down to the gym where I trained at, I wouldn't have gotten there until almost 8 o'clock. It's kind of hard. I'm working so much. If I could, maybe hit the lottery or something, or get into a position where I had a little bit more flexibility, I'd like to be able to get back in shape, lose some weight, and, if I had the mind I have now with the physicality I had 12 years ago, I'd be devastated, because I learned so much just from training guys and watching guys and just watching my trainers train guys.
I know exactly what you mean. When I was just a banger, I just wanted to get in there and hit somebody. And now, working with guys, you learn so much. And you're like, man, if I was doing this. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And as far as your upcoming show, is there anybody in there that's in the Golden Gloves mix in the MMA world or an Olympic candidate down the line?
We got a couple good open class fighters. I got Joe Easy. He's a young guy. Last year he was rated number one in the world in his age group. I got Michael Clark, who's the Golden Glove, who will be fighting his last amateur fight before he turns pro. And another guy, Dejon Smith, who is a really good young fighter. He's 9-2, and he's fought all open class fights ever since his first fight. So he's a really good guy, too. And then the main event, I got this young 98-pound girl. She's 98 pounds. It's actually Anderson Choi. I met her in the bar, and she winds up getting in a fist fight with another girl. This girl's tiny. She's 98 pounds. She beats up this other girl. I go up to her. I'm like, you should be boxing, not fighting in the bar. And the next time she sees me, she's like, months later, she's like, let's do it. I'm like, let's do what? And she was like, I want to box. I got her tight on the card. She's never fought before. She sold 200 tickets. Got a huge crowd coming to see her, and she's the main event.
Awesome.
Her name's Chantel Fletcher.
So you discovered a natural in a bar.
Good. She was a street fighter. I was like, I got to get you in the gym, and sure enough, she came in.
Yeah. Well, I think sooner or later, that's how we all realize that we have skills, and we should be boxing, is when we get in that real life situation where we have to fight somebody on instinct. When I was a kid, we actually had a trend going around back in the 80s where kids would say to every insult, you know, they'd come back with, "Oh, your mother," you know. And my mom died when I was young, so I always used to take that as "let's fight." You know, as soon as I would hear that, my switch would flip. So that's how I got into fighting, and it got to the point where I had 3 or 4 fights in a row where I just, you know, really did some damage. And the last fight I had in high school, I actually broke the kid's arm with punches. You know, I wasn't doing
punches. Oh, wow.
So that really got me over the hump to say, I don't want to do this anymore and get in trouble. You know, I'm going
to
do this.
Yeah. Time to put in the ring.
So, and it's always been a great honor whether you know, do excellently at it or not, just being able to say, "I'm a boxer," you know, and having
100%
box, so it's always cool when you do.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how hard it is to get up there in front of other people and do 3 minute rounds, 500-minute rounds, right?
2 minute rounds.
Oh, absolutely. One of my old coaches from college, he was, you know, well known throughout the country, throughout the world, as a boxing and a wrestling coach, Dr. Ken Potts. And the one thing he would always say was, is once you climb up those steps, you earn respect. You know, it doesn't matter if you lose, it's if you have the courage to climb up those steps and do the very best you can, you get respect. And he even said one time he had a young fighter that was so stressed out that he went back in the dressing room and was like by himself. And, you know, he had his robe on and everything. And he came out, got his gloves on, got in the ring. He forgot to put his trunks on.
Oh, man.
You know, as Dr. Cox would always say, you can't let your blood turn to piss. That's how he would always say. He's like, you know, you sit down and get on there, and they're like, you know, they look great in the gym, they can beat up a heavy bag. But when it gets up to that time, because their blood turns to piss.
But it's absolutely true. I tell all my fighters before they go in, I'm like, you're already doing something that 99% of your friends don't have the courage to do. So just go ahead and get out there and do your thing.
Yeah.
I think another thing is funny. Now, I fought 30 amateur fights, 2-time All-American. I fought a lot of exhibitions. I sparred in a real tough gym in South Philly that had a tough reputation, and I was able to get in there with some pros. And I'm talking about pros that went, you know, did pretty well. Never bothered me in the least. You know, I could get up there. One of the things that I learned early on, when I first started, you know, I was a guy, like, I kind of started it because I was a street fighter and needed a good release, boxing hit. But once I started, you know, really competitive, you know, I wasn't athletic as some of the other guys, and I lost my first few fights. I was like 1-3 or something. And then I was training, I was learning, you know, proper technique. But I was real stiff. You know, I couldn't relax. I was real stiff out there, and I was, you know, real serious about it. Maybe I watched too many Rocky movies. I don't know. And I had a guy in the gym, and he was a few weight classes lighter than me, and I used to watch him spar. And he would always smoke a lot of trash out there, and he would just run his mouth during the sparring sessions. And I remember saying, I don't want to spar him. Not that I'm afraid of him, but he'll talk trash on me, and I'm trying to be real serious, and I'm trying to become a good boxer, and he'll make me look stupid. And I'm saying, okay, Tony, you're going to spar with Simon today. And I'm like, oh, boy, he's going to talk trash to me. So we get in there, and we're sparring, and he started talking trash to me, and just by instinct, I started talking it back. And all the fighters that were kind of like mentoring me, the guys that were mentoring me, pulled me outside afterwards, and they're like, you know why he was doing that to you? I said, no. I was mad at him doing it. I said, no, he's trying to teach you how to relax and just have fun out there.
Wow, thanks for the reconnection, computer. Disconnecting in the first place. Chris,
hello?
Chris.
So I guess we got cut out.
Yeah, actually, you sound much better now, so maybe it's...
Yeah, I can hear a lot better, too.
All right. Well, tell us
about that,
the Baltimore boxing scene. I know it's kind of in the middle there, underneath New England, where there's a lot of, and between kind of New England and Philadelphia, where there's obviously a lot of, boxing history in the Boston and Philly area. What about Maryland is different and special, I guess, in the boxing?
Baltimore, you got Baltimore and D.C. You got a good breed of fighters fighting out in D.C. You know, a lot of the D.C. fighters fight in Baltimore. A lot of the Baltimore fighters fight in D.C. So you got a good rivalry there, good breed of fighters. Things in the pros in Baltimore or in Maryland are a little bit slow right now, but we're kind of working on getting these guys going from the amateurs again and kind of rebuilding the program. My partner, Jake the Snake Smith, who used to do all the professional boxing in Maryland, and I guess he's kind of, had enough of it, and Maryland's basically gone from doing about 12 to 15 pro shows a year to like 5 or 6. So we're all trying to talk Jake to getting back into pros and promoting pro shows again, but the truth is we're basically trying to build it up from the amateur ranks and, build these guys fresh and kind of revitalize, a scene where, it's family fun. Like the last show I did with Jake, we did the Fed Hill Fight Fest, which was a little different. We threw it at Raven Stadium. We set it up like a festival, where there was different stands and stuff going on. So the fact that boxing was going on was just a plus. Like this big festival going on right outside of Raven Stadium with boxing going on too. This one we're doing now, it's a big benefit for breast cancer. We're doing giveaways. We have table seating. So we're basically just trying to do different stuff to get new crowds out to boxing and kind of revamp it from the ground up.
Great idea. And what is your ultimate goal with all this? Do you want to have more large-scale amateur events, or pretty much just want to keep the same pace going, and just get more local names out to the fights and that sort of thing?
Yeah, me personally, I'm still kind of, I'm young and I've been fighting up until recently, so I'm still green. I'm having fun as I go. I guess ultimately the goal is to keep doing good shows and keep getting new fans out to boxing. And that's what we're doing so well. Is we got people that don't know anything about boxing, never been to a boxing show, coming out to these amateur shows and they're having a blast or having a ball. They're telling their friends about it, and we're getting we're getting insane turnouts and insane followings, on our websites and our gyms and stuff. And from there, we'll start doing pro shows again and try to keep the same thing going where we do get big followings and we can throw big shows and hopefully attract some of the bigger promoters to come in and want to do shows in our town because we have that base following.
Right. Cool.
For example, I was contacted by the Verizon Center. They're hosting the Amir Khan Lamont Peterson fight.
Right. That fight.
They contacted me about helping them out with ticket sales and. What's that?
I actually saw the Eliminator fight.
Yeah, breaking up again.
They had Cosmopolitan fights out here in Las Vegas, so I saw Peterson get the win there to actually earn the fight with Cos.
Right, it was a 12th round knockout or TKO, right?
Yeah, it was kind of sketchy the way it developed because I would have liked to see what the cards were, and it was a close fight, and then. It was just somewhere out of the blue in the 12th. Peterson unloaded on the guy, and he took a knee. He didn't even go down. You know, he took a knee, and then, you know, he's looking right in the ref's face, but he just didn't get up in time for the 10 count. So whether he did it on purpose or whether he didn't hear the count, I don't know, but it seems a little bit sketchy the way it ended. But
yeah.
Peterson did a great job.
I'm a Peterson fan. Of course, he's a local guy. He's a DC. So I'm a big fan. I think he's underrated.
Yeah, just the storyline, too, is incredible. Him and his brother, the way they ended up falling into boxing in so many ways. They just, you know, were able to be so good at it and, you know, gain such notoriety.
Oh, yeah, the great storyline. And then I was always intrigued by the story of Lamont Peterson sparring Floyd Mayweather. I know it's just sparring, but, you know, the rumors were that he was putting it on Floyd a little bit in sparring, and those guys were really going at it.
Yeah, they actually talked about that. Because when I was up at the Mayweather gym before the Ortiz fight, you know, I was hanging around Floyd's Uncle Roger there when he was being quizzed by all the reporters, and they talked about that sparring session.
They talked about the sparring with Lamont?
Yeah, and, you know, that was a common opponent with Ortiz, so, you know, people were talking about the comparisons there between the two. And so the father actually brought that up, so it's not something, I mean, the uncle did. It's not something that he's forgotten. So it must have been a
big yeah, true. So.
Yeah, obviously that the Baltimore, D.C. area had a big fighting spirit. They have their stars in the scene right now, like Lamont. But, you know, I'm curious to see how he does against Amir Khan. He seems to
Amir Khan, he's fast. So.
Lamont seems to be a very cautious, like, more of a defensive fighter, kind of like I was when I boxed, because I always figured, you know, why make the mistake first? Wait for the guy to make the mistake and then hit him, you know. But
right.
The stuff that people really like to see more of these days, it seems, is like a guy like Manny Pacquiao, who just never stops. And Amir Khan is like that. I think that's why a lot of people are calling for Amir Khan versus Pacquiao, even though it'll probably never happen because they're both trained by the same guy.
Yeah, I know, it's a shame. But I can see that being a great fight, a lot of action.
And who out there would you say is your favorite fighter, if you had to pick one, or who do you like to watch a lot?
I mean, of course I like the big two. You know, Mayweather, Pacquiao, I like watching them, but you know what I was really, really into? I was really high on it, and I'm ashamed of him not fighting. I like Andre Durrell a lot.
Right.
And I thought he had a ton of potential. I actually thought he won the Carl Frost fight, and I would have loved to see him fight Andre Ward, but I know he's out of action right now. I don't know if we'll see him fight again, but I'm a big Durrell fan.
Yeah, that whole Showtime tournament seems like it's taking forever to finish it, but...
Yeah, I know. It's been, what, like a year and a half now?
Yeah, it's definitely a good idea, but it's just unbelievable the way it's... I mean, both of their tournaments, they had the bantamweight one even had injury issues and everything. And,
yeah, it's hard to make that happen in boxing.
They have these prize fighter tournaments over in the UK, and that's four fights in one night for some of these guys, and they don't have injuries.
I know, I just heard watching those.
Is there anybody out there you want to give a shout out to or say hello to? We got another interview coming up here, so we got to kind of cut it short.
Well, that's fine. Thanks for having me on the air. If anybody needs to know more about what we're doing or where to contact us, you can go to BaltimoreBoxing.com or follow us on Twitter at BeMoreBoxing.
All right.
Thanks for calling, guys.
No problem. All right. Send us any PR you have to info@unlimitedfightnews.com or just have Matt send it over, whatever you want to do, and we'll update everybody and keep them posted on your events, and, you know, we'll keep an eye on it.
I appreciate that. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So that's Chris Nessely, the co-promoter. of the amateur event there down in Baltimore, Maryland. And like you said, go to BaltimoreBoxing.com. Sounds like a good website to start out with. Sounds like he's got the right idea to start from the ground up. And I'm sure they'll be making a name for themselves down there and getting a lot of good fanfare in the future if they are successful and bring all these locals into these fights. And it did also, provide a boost to the pro scene down there, too, I would imagine. You still with us, Tony?
I'm still with you.
Are you conscious?
Yeah.
If you want to duck it out for the MMA interview, you're more than welcome. I know, when I feel sick, the last thing I want to do is talk about a subject I don't like.
Well, keep going. I'm sure I
should
play
soon
with a
quarter pounder
there.
All right. Just wanted to put that out there. Though you sound a lot better now than when you first picked up.
Feel a little bit better.
You get to call somebody
that hot thing, and
get yourself away from what's pissing you off. Right. I feel you there. So we're gonna end Lee Beam to the conversation. See what he's up to. Lee.
Yeah.
Hey, how's it going? This is Rebel Resident Rich Bergeron.
How you guys doing?
Great. We got our old pal Tony the Tornado on the phone too.
Okay. How's it going?
Great.
All right.
And Lee, we want to do kind of give you an opportunity to talk about your next fight here. We know that we're going to be talking about your last fight, of course, eventually. But tell us who you fight next and what the event has gotten in store for everybody down there in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Sure. I'm fighting Bobby Faversmith for CFX. And, that's going to be November 19th down at the Jungleplex, newly renovated Jungleplex down in Plymouth, Mass. For Gary and Linda, and I'm really excited about it. I just took the fight yesterday, so getting ready and gonna go in there and do what I always do.
Awesome. And actually, it was kind of ironic we got you this week because a few weeks ago we were talking to Mark Coleman, and I was looking at his record and saw that he had fought Dan Severn a few times, and I mentioned your fight with him. Because we ended up talking about it, and he was feeling real sorry for Dan Severn going out like that, and that's actually Dan's last fight on his record. He hasn't fought since then. I'm not sure Dog screwed up, but
I've talked to him a little bit too. He hasn't fought.
So what's that like? Being not only on the guy's record, but being the last fight right now on his record, and having a 100 wins. That must be huge too. Beat him.
It really is. I mean, when I took that fight, it was on short notice, and it was to fight a legend in the sport, a guy I looked up to, or a guy I call like an idol for me in the sport. I knew he was older, but I looked up his record. He'd won like 8 out of his last 9 fights over the last 2 years, so it wasn't like he was just walking around losing and taking fights for anything else.
Right.
It was an honor to fight him. I talked to him. We went to dinner the night before. I think this is a sport. I don't think it as, the hate to get in a fight, or I have to be angry to fight. Anyone who's in a fight knows I'm usually corner size before I fight. I used to see him joking around, hanging out. I mean, Mark Griffin and I are going back and forth, fucking on each other the whole time. So go to dinner with him. How could I pass that up? I'm going with NCAA, national champ, UFC champ, UFC tournament champ, UFC Hall of Famer. When I walk in the Ultimate Fighter sitting in my house, I stand seven holding a belt in the background. You know, how do you pass up dinner with him, even if you can fight him the next day?
Right. And what kind of impression did you get as far as, you know, why he still fights and, you know, is it a money thing? Is it a pride thing? I know there was talk that he just wanted to get his 100th win. What impression did you get from hanging out with him and fighting him?
You know, the impression I got was that he loves the sport. He's an ambassador for it. He still trains people, and he just loves it. That was really the impression I got. I mean, obviously getting 100 wins was probably definitely in his mind. But when we talked about I own a wrestling club. You know, he does some wrestling stuff. He does some MMA stuff. We talked about that. We talked about our families. You know, and he just genuinely enjoys what he's doing.
Right. And you obviously have the same nickname, the Beast. So it was the Battle of the Beasts.
it was.
Did you get your nickname from him, or did you just take it because it kind of rhymed with the last name a little bit?
I don't know who actually gave it to me. I think, you know, one day with my ground in town, somebody said, man, that guy's just like a beast on top. And I think that's the name from him.
Cool. And looking back at the record there, you're 8-2 there. I remember probably the last time I saw you face-to-face was when you fought Christian Moorcraft. He went on to the UFC and didn't do so hot. When you look back at fights like that and your career, are you glad it worked out that way? Or you still want to relive that?
I mean, it's Moorcraft, right? I didn't stick to my game plan, I think it was fine.
Right.
I took him down relatively quickly. I got the half butt, which is where I like to be, and I was looking for strength. And then for some reason, my brain said, go for the heat book. I shouldn't have done that. I should have stayed on top and top control and worked games. What happens from there? I ended up losing the fight. And I think everybody's got this perception that Christian just moved well in the UFC, but I think overall he's done relatively well. I mean, he fought Stefan Struve and he beat the crap out of him for the first round. He even fought in the second. You know, he beat that big guy, Sean McCorkle, and then he lost to Mitch Leone, and Mitch Leone is a monster. So, you know, I think, you know, yeah, he's 1-2 in the UFC, but I think he's done relatively well from how young he is and how little time he's actually been training in the sport.
Right. Yeah, I was impressed with him the first few fights. It just seemed like, you know, where a lot of other guys like Mitrione has just, you know, jumped into the sport and done well every fight, it seems like Christian's just struggled a lot more than usual and doesn't seem to, you know, improve leaps and bounds every fight like a lot of guys. But
I definitely see that aspect of the game not growing up but I think part of it might be he started training in the beginning and he's still young, you know, a young kid.
Right.
You don't see a lot of heavyweights out there that are 23 years old coming out and being able to kill it.
Right. And is that still on your mind as far as, you know, that being a goal to get to the UFC, or are you pretty much satisfied whatever happens?
You know, I would love to get to the UFC, but it's not something that if I don't get there, I'm going to be miserable. You know, I do this because I enjoy it. I train people. I coach wrestling. I work a full-time job, so I don't have the time to put in, you know, to focus solely on getting to the UFC. I take the fights that are offered to me. You know, I'm willing to fight just about anybody if it makes sense and it's a good matchup and you know, go out and have fun. Like I said, I take it as a competition. It's a way for me being a wrestler to still compete. But I think I've really taken to the striking game as well. I just, you know, answer the question. I'd love to get to the UFC. Will I get there? I don't know. I hope so. You know, it's tough.
Yeah, especially with the heavyweight scene the way it is, and they just got the strike force, and they're pulling over guys from that before they even close it out. That's a tough division. But at the same time, you know, you got guys like Carwin and Mark Coleman, who we just talked to, that are moving towards retirement, I think, and not looking as great as they used to. So I think they need that need to kind of shore up those areas where people are getting worn out and quitting.
Right.
In the sport, so you never know. The other thing is Bellator. I don't know if you've been following them, but we were just talking earlier on the show that Bellator just got bought by Viacom, which corporation. So you never know what kind of opportunities will show up there. And nobody's thinking now that they're going to compete with the UFC. So, to me, it would be hard not to put that eventually, they're going to have to make some major progress by throwing money. That's what the UFC did in the first place anyway. You know, they lost $40 million in the first few years.
Right.
But as far as the New England scene, what's it like for you to fight in the New England area and, you know, live with that scene? Being so popular with guys like Kenny Florian, Joe Lazon, and those folks being at just about every show that I've been at.
I mean, it's a good show. I mean, I know a lot of these guys. I've trained with Lazon off on since I started the sport. Another one that goes through a lot of the stuff is Gonzaga. You know, you see Florian, you see the CE Tong guys, the Y Crew guys, John Howard, and, you know, everybody around. So it's a great thing for us to have is all these big names out there because it promotes it locally. And the other thing I like is that there's a lot of organizations now that are holding fights on a regular basis. You know, it's not three fights a year for this promotion and four fights for that one, and it's it.
Right. And you fought for CageFX, Lyndon Gary for a while, but
yep.
You've also been able to fight in a couple other promotions along the way.
I fight for Gary and Linda mainly, but, you know, I'll take the fights if it makes sense elsewhere. I took the fifth spot for CES. I fought for Paul Van Dale and Jesse Camp. I fought for Joe Manziello and trying to work on something for AFO at some point, too, maybe, is the heavyweight title we've been talking, but... You know, my main focus right now is just getting ready for the CFX show and Bobby Favors.
And what do you know about this guy?
I know he's a big guy, well over 300 pounds. He's a little taller than I am, southpaw as am I. I saw him beat Sean Galano, and I watched him lose to Josh Diekman. So, you know, both very good guys. Galano is a good record. Diekman's got a great record, so... You know, he's tough from what I know. I mean, I haven't gotten online and looked up anything else or his record. I think someone told me he was like 10-12, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
Right. And so far, as far as SureDog says, you haven't got out of the first round yet, good or bad. Did that change in any time soon, or is that just your style?
No, that's not changing. I train for five-minute rounds. I do a lot of work with Freddie Conrad, who does my strength and conditioning, as well as Pete Rapoli, and I spar a lot, and I do a lot of grappling, and I do all that. I train for five-minute rounds, but, you know, at the end of the day, I get paid the same no matter how long the fight takes, and my goal is to always end it quickly in a violent fashion that the fans are going to love. So my goal is to end it in the first round every time I get in a cage. I hope to never sit on that stool in between rounds.
Well, the closest you came was 4:06 against Luke Corona, which is a fight I was actually a cage side for, the Battle Under the Stars.
That guy just wouldn't go to sleep, man. His face looked like hamburger afterwards.
Yeah, he actually got a nice close-up of his swollen eye coming out the cage as he came out my gate with such a ride after I was sitting there. And he kind of gave me a look, too, when I was taking the picture, like, you didn't want me to.
Right.
What can you do? But it was probably one of the most badly damaged faces I've ever gotten a snapshot of.
Yeah, it was a bad one. That's the worst I've found in a cage.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, too, the first time I saw you, jumped right over the side of the cage, which Linda was telling me you've been working real hard on.
I broke the platform that time. No, what happened was when I fought for CFX out in Worcester, the first one they did, I jumped up on the cage, and when I jumped up on the cage, I looked right up into the stage lights.
Yeah.
So I was going to jump up on top of it or over it, and I looked up in the lights, and it kind of, like, stunned me, so I didn't get all the way up on it. So then, you know, Gary and Linda were busting me about it. I said, all right, next time I'm going right up and over the top and out it. So I did.
Yeah. Awesome.
Now I swear they get changed without the platform around it, so I can't do it anymore.
Well, what's it like working for those two? Obviously, they've been around for a long time. Put on a lot of fights. What's it like from your perspective working?
You know, from my perspective, it's great. I mean, I corner a ton of guys, and I fight myself, and I've fought for them, and if I have a choice, I'd fight for them. I like the way they put their shows on. I like the way they take care of the fighters, and, you know, if there's a problem, they handle it, they fix it, they get it right, and they figure it out. I haven't had any bad experiences with Gary or Linder, all positive, and you know, I consider them both friends. So, you know, anything I can do to help them with their business, and, you know, and they're getting fights for me, and they're bringing guys in. I mean, they're bringing in a guy, Bobby's coming in from Ohio for a fight because locally I'm having a difficult time getting matchups.
Oh, you're putting the fear of God in people, huh?
I don't know. You know, I had a fight scheduled with Randy Smith, and I got hurt. I tweaked something, so I had to. That was the beginning of October. I was supposed to fight. I had to back out of that. We were gonna look at doing that again, but he's fighting on a Bellator card right after Thanksgiving, so we'll have to put that on hold. So Gary and Linda, you know, Gary and Linda were able to find me this fight, which is great.
And what would you say is the one thing that you enjoy most about being involved in mixed martial arts?
The thing I enjoy most is it gives me an outlet. It lets me be a good person in the rest of my day. It lets me get that energy, that aggression out. So I enjoy that. I mean, that's definitely a positive to it. But, I mean, the best thing is kind of the friends and the relationships that I've built from this sport. You know, friends now that I didn't know 3 years ago that, you know, are going to be lifelong friends, and I consider almost family. And, you know, we go to our kids' birthday parties together, and, you know, we'll go out for dinner, and you know, just that camaraderie that, you know, a lot of guys that play sports in high school and college, is there's no way to get it afterwards. And this is one of those ways.
Right. Yeah, it's always been kind of interesting to me how, you know, when you fight yourself, and you realize what kind of a sport it is, and the kind of dedication it takes to actually get in the ring and either box or do MMA, and people are always amazed that you know, when you're involved in such a sport that's seen as so violent, you know, you can be such a nice guy. But there are a lot of people involved in the sport. I'd say more so than jerks. There's a lot of nice people. Just probably has a lot to do with that they get their aggression out in training or actually in fighting, so they don't.
I think there's a ton of good people. I mean, you still get your jackasses, assholes that are just jerks, and they got to be mean, and everyone they fight they hate, and all this other stuff. But to me, I mean, I'll shake the guy's hand before we fight, and then we'll go grab a drink after the fight. As far as I'm concerned, it's a sport and it's a competition, and you know, this is in real life. This is what you do for fun.
All right. And do you have a favorite style or punch or strike or anything like that?
Yeah, I like to take guys down so they can't hit me back. And then use my elbows and my fists for some nice ground and pound.
And what's been the best fight we've ever had so far?
It's got to be Severn. I mean, I knocked unconscious a UFC Hall of Famer. I mean, I can't. I don't think anything I've done so far even comes close to that.
Cool.
It was, like I said, it is an honor to fight him and be in a cage with him and meet him. and be able to spend some time with him outside of the cage. And, you know, I think that fight was a great fight for me, and you know, hopefully it helps me going forward.
Cool. Now, you started back in 2004, as it shows on your record here, and then you didn't have a fight until 2009 after that. What happened in that first fight?
That first fight, I was just training at Lozon's gym, Joe Lozon's, with Joe Pomfret and those guys, and I was home from school for the summer, and I said, you know, I was my sophomore year of college, and I said, you know, if I'm going to be here, I was helping all those guys with their wrestling and doing something else. I said, if I'm going to be here, I might as well fight too. So I just took that on that, and then I went back to school and really had to focus on my wrestling and get my degree. And then when I graduated school, I had a daughter, so I had to, you know, go to work, get a job, pay the bills, do all that stuff before I could get back into it. I knew I'd want to get back into it at some point. And same thing, it started again with going to the gym just to work with some people, help some people with the wrestling for MMA and that type of stuff. And I'm like, if I'm going to be doing this, I might as well just fight now, you know. So that's when I started again. I started training this, I started training the summer of 08, you know, on a pretty regular basis. And then started fighting in, I think it was January of 09. Had a couple layoffs in that time. I mean, it's been about three years we're looking at, but I took about 6 months off. I jacked my knee up, and then I destroyed my hand at one point. And I took about another 4 or 5 months off. So I've taken, you know, 10 months off in the last 3 years total probably, but still fought pretty consistently, you know.
Yeah, I'd say.
I'd rather fight every weekend, you know. I don't want to wait months between a fight.
It's changing though. I mean, it seems, you know, to a guy like me who actually never even followed the sport back when it was a one night tournament deal with the UFC. It seems strange to me how far away they've gotten from that model. You know, it would kind of be interesting, I think, to try that. Again, you know, whether you have to do it at a an Indian reservation or not, I don't know. But
I'd sign up for that in a second.
Yeah, it would be great to have that again. As a
I think the problem at the higher level is just the pay per fight for these upper level guys.
Right.
And if you're going to do a tournament like that in the UFC, if you're going to do that at, you know, 205, you're going to want, you know, 6 or 8 of the top 205 pounders in it. And it's expensive. And, you know, if you do that and somebody gets hurt and it's just the backfill in the tournament and then the liability from how long they're going to be out if they're fighting 3 times in a night, and I think that's at the higher level, that's why it's not done. And it brings it back to that, you know, human cockfighting and guys going in there already beat up a little bit or cut or this or that, and just the overall public perception of it. I mean, I think it's a great thing for the sport, and as you know, as a martial artist, as a mixed martial arts fighter, I mean, I would love to be involved in something like that.
Yeah, it kind of threw me for a loop when they had that MMA movie with the Warrior there, and they set it up with a tournament that was, I think it was a weekend tournament, still sort of, you know, closer to the original season, what exists now.
Right.
It seemed like the media was even farther behind than it should in displaying what the real story is right now. But,
right.
You know, the fans seem to like to see that the best fight the best, and, you know, incredible fights like that. But anyway.
I mean, I think it's every dream, you know. Everyone wants to see the best versus the best. Like, I mean, I'd love to see Anderson Silva go up to 205 and fight John Jones, you know?
Yeah, that's one fight a lot of people would love to see. I still can't believe that I actually, you know, had a couple of John's fights back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
There was one down at Foxwoods. It was with the USFL circuit. I don't know if they're even still doing business, but they had a fight down at Foxwoods, and he knocked the guy out in the first round. And, you know, when I went back and looked at the fight, I remembered it. You know, just to see the way that he went from obscurity to being the best, you know, pound-for-pound fighter
in the world behind GSP and Anderson Silva. Like almost tonight, it was just so beautiful that that could happen.
Yeah, meteoric rise. I mean, the guy's got unbelievable natural ability, unbelievable talent, and you put that with incredible work ethic, and that's what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Just the dynamic striking, too. I think a lot of people just love to see that on top of the skill level.
Yeah, the angles and the way he throws things and the funky things that he comes out with, just incredible.
Yeah,
he's the type of guy that fights at 205, and if he wanted to, put on another 20 pounds, could fight at any weight and do well.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, one thing that the bigger guys usually have a problem with is reach, you know, because they get the where's the beach type look, you know. One thing I always was told as a kid is when you're boxing, you don't want to lift a lot of weights. You know, I never did MMA, never really was into it until 2006 when it was too late for me to get involved myself. But when I boxed, I used to remember there was an interview with Angelo Dundee about working with Muhammad Ali, and he talked about how you don't want to lift weights because it shortens your reach. And a lot of the MMA guys don't lift a lot of weights nowadays, but you get guys like Brock Lesnar who, you know, pretty much had to lift weights to look good for wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, that build is real popular at that level of the sport, so.
Yeah, I'm lucky I don't lift a ton of weights, but I don't have a great reach, so I better really stay away from weights because that's just going to shorten it up even more than it already is.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's a flexibility thing, too. Especially with all the BJJ you have to be familiar with and having to be flexible there to get out of moves.
Right.
But, you know, whenever I was on a boxing team or a formal boxing training program, there really wasn't much of a need for weights because you could get the same results with push-ups and sit-ups and throwing punches at the back.
Right.
Weights are for football players, I guess, is the way I look at it. But what's your ultimate goal with the sport?
You know, eventually one day I'd like to own my own gym and train fighters. I mean, I do a decent amount of training now. I train the guys at the AVD in Easton. You know, I help out at some other local gyms. I help with wrestling for MMA at a bunch of different gyms. And I love coaching and teaching. And, I mean, my ultimate goal would be to get to the UFC and be successful in the UFC and eventually own my own gym.
If they signed you tomorrow to the UFC and you got a chance to give them a name that who you wanted to fight, who would it be?
Warcraft.
I knew you were going to say that. You really want that rematch, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've both improved since that fight, and I'd really like to see what happens. I mean, I've got nothing but respect for the kid with everything that he's done, and obviously, I mean, if you ask me who I'd like to fight again on a local level, I'd like to fight Parker Porter, because that's my other loss. And in the UFC level, that's where Warcraft is. That's who I'd like to fight. But, I mean, there's a ton of other guys that I'd fight anybody. They could call me and say, we want you to fight this guy. I'd say, what's the date? Okay, I'll start training for it.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, I don't want to fight this guy. I don't want to fight that guy. I just want to fight. I like to fight. I've always liked to fight. So, you know, Warcraft, just because he's a loss on my record, and I'd love to avenge that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I remember the scene in the dressing room after that fight. You were pretty shell shocked, and
yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it came down to not executing my game plan. I was in great shape. I went in and did exactly what I wanted to do at the beginning of the fight, my game plan, and I got away from it. I mean, and that's why I have trainers, and that's why I have people in my corner, is to follow the game plan, and I didn't follow the game plan. I was more upset at myself about that more than anything else.
Right. Well, from what I remember, you know, you were pushing the advantage at the beginning. It's just, you know,
yeah, I mean,
one of those any given day moments, just happens to the best of them. So.
Yeah, I think in this I mean, that's really true. That's better than any other sport. I think, especially at the upper weight classes, I mean, you put yourself in one bad position, the fight's going to be over.
And as far as role models, is there anybody inside or outside of the sport that you really look to that's helped you out a lot along the way? Is there any role model that you have inside or outside of the sport that's helped you out along the way?
Yeah, I mean, definitely inside the sport is going to be guys like George and Seth, Mark Coleman, all those guys that the bar for great wrestlers that came into the sport and did well in the sport and then developed their game. You know, I think Coleman and Lord really developed game, you know, Randy especially developed game to the boxing and jiu-jitsu and everything else. Those are the guys in the sport. You know, and outside of the sport, you know, is my family. There's a lot of family members that helped me where I am, and then there's been other people in my life to support me and really help me do the things that I need to do. And then, you know, every day when I wake up, I think I gotta be the type of person that my little girls can look up to, and that's what I want to be. And I've got people that I look up to say that's the way that I want to do it.
Cool. Yeah, I actually got to meet Randy here in Las Vegas. Living out here temporarily, coming back in November. Actually, it's weekend of your flight. I'm not going to actually be able to make it, but I'm coming back right around that time. And Randy's like one of the guys that is just such an icon in the sport. And when you actually see him face to face, he doesn't give you that impression that he's got an ego at all. It's just
right.
Very open, conversational, and he cares about sport too. He's Jim out here, I went to a big grappling event there was where I met him. And, you know, there was a huge event of grapplers, and he's there watching the whole thing, taking it in, taking pictures with everybody, and it's just a regular guy he's out here. He's got the gym and everything like that, but, you know, half the time he's off to a movie now, too. So he's the best of both worlds. You know, from graduating from the UFC to his the next life there.
Right.
So it's a good role model to have. And, you know, it's just a humble guy, too. So that helps, of course.
I haven't been lucky enough to meet him and same with Coleman. I've met Severin, so that was an honor. Hopefully someday I'll get to meet Andy and hopefully someday Mark.
Yeah, we was talking about you with Mark weeks ago. I mentioned your fight with your dad, and he was kind of bummed because, you know, he really likes Dan. Thinks Dan's a great guy, and, you know, obviously doesn't keep in touch with him to any day. No, he's taught him a few times. So obviously there's a sort of a problem.
Right.
So I just kind of mentioned the fight off the top. You know, he was just had nothing but nice things to say about Dan, but he was more concerned with whether the guy's all right, whether he was hurt him bad.
He was okay. He was out on his way to the mat, and then, you know, as I've been told a million times, he keeps striking for the rest of the episode, but I hit him a couple more times, and he really was out, and I wasn't going to keep striking, so.
Right. Yeah, it was a good fight. I actually saw the tape. So, great job there.
Thanks.
As far as your next fight, do you have any predictions other than it's not getting out of the first round?
It's going to end in a violent fashion.
All right.
You know, I'm gonna win the fight. It's gonna be TKO or KO in the first round.
Cool. Well, I'm sure I'll hear about it. Maybe even write about it. And we'll definitely keep an eye on maybe I'll be at your next fight. So I'll be back in the by then. And okay. I know you still keep in touch with your buddy from Prime Athletics there, Sean Rockwell.
Yep.
He's out there on Facebook saying something.
Yeah, no, definitely like to thank Sean and all that he and Prime have done to support me in this journey. And, you know, definitely Club Alex's as well. They've been there for a long time supporting me, and I really appreciate what both of those companies have done to support me and my growth in the sport.
Cool. Was there anybody else you want to give a shout-out to or any final thoughts you wanted to mention before we go?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to shout out to gyms. I mean, I own a wrestling club in Lakeville, Brick Road Wrestling Club. Come check us out. Y-Crew. Elite Fitness in Stoughton. And anyone that wants to play MMA, get on the wrestling app when you're young.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure catching up with you. We definitely had a good interview here, and if anybody wants to see in action, they can go to Jungleplex on November 19th down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and they can catch your fight with Bobby Favors. And best of luck to you, even though I know you're not going to need it, and we'll keep in touch.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, have a good night.
You guys have a good night, too.
All right, oh, Rich. Pretty beat, so from that group, man.
All right. I was afraid you had dropped off the call. You were so quiet.
Hello.
I was listening.
Are you looking for my daddy? Okay, let me go get him.
That must be Lee's kid.
Oh, okay. Well, I ain't got much time. Well, I'm out, man. Beavis and Butthead's coming on now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So...
Yeah, MTV, I'm turning on right now.
Okay.
See you later.
We're over and out. We'll see.